Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
We got Mark Bullrichter in studio for the next hour. This is going to be fun. We got a lot of football to talk about. How are you, dude?
I'm excellent. How are you doing this morning?
Oh, look.
You're looking dapper. Are you going somewhere today?
Yeah, I got a meeting. My wife said the same thing. It goes to show you
just
the
so
way.
Just so people know at home, yeah. Like if you didn't watch earlier today, Nate has a collared shirt on this morning.
I got
morning,
a polo shirt on.
So it looks like he's either going
like,
golfing, like a tournament today or a meeting. So there you go.
I got my golf pants on. I got a golf shirt on. And it's not because I'm going golfing. I've got a meeting. I'm on the executive board for the Victory Project, which is the
good organization.
Great organization, philanthropic arm of Sporting Kansas City. And I was, it was funny because I came downstairs this morning and my wife was already awake and she's like, "Well, you look nice. What are you doing today?" And I said, "Well, I got this meeting." And when they asked me to be on the executive board, that was my first response was, "You know, I'm not an executive, right? Like, nothing about me really says executive. I'm just not an executive." And they're like, "Yeah, it's all right. We still want you." And I told my wife, I just don't feel like being the one person that shows up to these meetings in sweatpants.
Yeah.
Which, as you know, that's typically what Steven and I wear on this, when we're doing this show.
It's the beauty of radio.
We're in sweatpants and hoodies and, you know, things like that. But
like me today?
Yeah. You're dressed much more appropriate for this job.
Well, I'm dressed for my job now, too, also nice to be able to work from home and, some of that kind of stuff.
Josh Briscoe the other day, I think like it was intended as a compliment. I can't even remember the way he described it, but he was like, I gotta work on the look that you pull off, which is like the nice sweatpant look. Like you have sweatpants, but you got nice Jordans on, like it
like
looks
like
joggers, you're not just completely letting yourself go.
Exactly. It's casual cool, whatever.
Casual cool. That was, I think that was a phrase he used.
I don't know if that's what he used, but that's what I'd call it.
I'll take that.
Casual,
I'm not
casual class, whatever.
I'm not casual or cool today. I gotta look nice. I got a meeting later on. But I'm going to go to College Game Day in Lawrence, Kansas this weekend. I just keep bringing it up because it's just so bizarre to me, the whole sense that I just said.
It's exciting. You know, we had this conversation, what was that, the day after Labor Day.
Yeah.
I was on the phone with you guys, and I told you I was bullish about the Kansas football program, and you stopped, and Steven probably threw himself back in the chair like, "Oh, great, here we go."
Yeah.
And you asked me the question of, should I be too excited about KU football and Lance Leipold right now? And I said no. And you asked me the question, do I know people around the program? Do I know what do I know about it? And I do know a few people around the program, as I mentioned at the time. And then I know a lot of people from back up in Nebraska when Lance Leipold was around the University of Nebraska Omaha football program when they had football. And people that have been around him on things and just know that he would get to get this going in the right direction. Now, did anybody probably see this start happening? No. Is this an expectation when you look at the games that they've won so far against the opponents that they've won? that KU should have in football? Yes, they should. Like, I'll tell you right now, my Hastings College Broncos, okay, in Nebraska where I went to school, have been really down the last couple of years. They got a new head coach 2 years ago, a guy I know, a guy that was a GA on our staff, was a head coach at Doane University for a while, was the AD there, and Hastings lured him back. They are 5-1 this year, okay? Coaching matters. Culture matters. And developing that culture and getting players to buy into your vision, your culture, it takes a little bit of time. But I think I can, and this is, I'm comparing an NAI school here in Hastings, right, to Kansas. But they're very similar in the fact that I think the expectations need to be the same. You know, can you challenge for a national championship at some point? Probably not. Okay, you might catch lightning in the bottle with that piece 1 year and it happens. But you should win the games against certain opponents in your conference, right? And all of a sudden maybe get to 8-9 wins 1 year. That should be where the expectations are on things. Because, and you're going to have a down year in there somewhere as well, but I love the direction they're going. I love the excitement around it. Now it's created some other discussions around whether he's going to be there long term. But I want people to step back and think about this. Like, I do think these first few games that KU has won are games that they should win, right? And when you start looking at your conference, the opponents you've played, those are games that you should have the wins you do overall. But I think a lot of this around Lance Leipold too is people forget he got when he got hired April.
Yeah.
Of 21, yeah. Right? April.
They missed out on spring ball.
Not in November, not in December, in April. And putting your stamp on a program and getting guys to believe, again, this is getting guys to believe into your system, your coaching, and believing in your quarterback, who was here before, that somebody else didn't believe in, makes a big difference. And then you can ride that energy to build your program back up where it needs to go. I think it's great that College Game Day is going to be there this week. It's a big game against another team that's been surprising in the Big 12 and TCU so far. So it's an exciting time, and they should be excited. And K-State fans should be excited as well on their side of things.
Oh, heck yeah. K-State's undefeated in the league as well. And, I mean, look, they've
already... The Big 12's wide open.
Yeah.
Let's just put it that way.
It's completely wide open. It's going to be crazy to watch. Before we move on to the Chiefs, just one other thing on it. So... The Nebraska job's open.
Yep.
The Wisconsin job is open.
Yes.
Both those programs have slightly more history, tradition, and fan base and money probably than Kansas does, and he's got a connection to both places. Look, and the thing about life is you don't get to choose when these opportunities come open.
Right.
Right? Like Kansas fans saw it with Roy Williams when the first time he turned down the North Carolina job, and you thought, well, that's going to be the one time that job came open for him in his life. And then a couple years later, it's open again. Correct. And he decides to take it. You don't get to choose the time, because I'm sure for Lance Leipold, part of it is would be like, I'm sure that he doesn't think to himself, oh, this is perfect. I've only been to this place for a year and a half.
Yeah.
And now it's time for me to jump. But if I put myself in his shoes, and there's a, like, I don't know if he considers Wisconsin home or not, or how much he considers Nebraska home.
Correct.
But if I'm in his shoes and I've worked my entire career and I've won all these national titles at a lower division in Wisconsin and all these things that I've been through, and now here I am at Kansas building something, I would feel incredibly torn by the idea, if Wisconsin's even going for him,
right,
of, man, this isn't the best timing. Like, I should be here for a little while longer to really build this thing before I just jump to the next job. But I don't get to choose that. Right? Like, this might be it. And if they're going to throw a boatload of cash at me, I don't know. What do you think? He says, look, we don't want to move again. We want to stay in Lawrence. That's what you got to say, though, also,
well,
if you're that coach.
You have to say that. And when you come in here your first 2 years, you're not expecting.
Right.
Again, you want to build your program up where you're at.
Right.
Right.
One step.
You're,
and he's a one step at a time guy. He's not a quick fix guy.
He's not expecting. This isn't. And this is no disrespect to him, but this is not some other bigger name coach who's been around, who KU has honestly hired before in the past.
Right.
That comes in here for a year, gets us going, and you're like, okay, now I'm jumping. Now this is probably jumping ship.
Yeah.
The things that he's saying are authentic. And, you know, you talk about the opportunities that are there. If they won four or five games this year at KU, if they won five games, which they're going to obviously win more than that now, but if they won five games this year at KU, his name would still be coming up for other jobs because of where KU has been from a football program the last couple of years.
Right.
I think people need to understand that. That doesn't mean he's leaving. That doesn't mean he's going to Nebraska or Wisconsin. We're only not even quite halfway through the football season yet. There's going to be a lot of other openings that he's going to be in demand for potentially. Yeah.
KU fans, like, why does it have to be two massive programs that he has ties to?
Yeah.
You know, at least like connections to, I should say.
Here's the thing with that, though.
No,
because
like, if it was Oregon or something, I don't think KU would be that worried about it.
Maybe not. Maybe not. But it's the one thing that when these types of high-profile jobs open, everybody looks for a connection.
Right.
Right? And when and it's the media side of things, and I consider myself media, right, with doing the things I do, but everybody looks toward a connection to things. And he's a Wisconsin native. He won all the national championships at Wisconsin Whitewater. Oh, boom, there's your connection to Wisconsin. He was a GA at Wisconsin. Nebraska, he was on the Nebraska staff for a little bit. He was the defensive coordinator and associate head coach at Nebraska Omaha when they had a football program. And they were good. And so, boom, there's your connection to Nebraska. You know, all these different things. And so we make all these connections to stuff, but you're right about when that opportunity is. The one question that nobody can speculate on, and we all can speculate on, is what does he feel about this whole situation? You know, because he might be in a situation now because people's goals are different. You know, they really are on things. And you may sit there and look at things and, you know, Bob Huggins obviously was at Cincinnati. Got in some recruiting trouble, right? Violations of stuff. Ends up at Kansas State. Has an opportunity to go home to West Virginia. Right?
Right.
Like, and I know, quote, he went home. But maybe it's not the best example. But sometimes I think coaches are better off staying in a spot and saying, hey, I can finish off my career here and really get this program and really put my stamp on this and quote, have kind of legendary status. And I'm not saying he's going to be that at KU, right? But you don't know what his ultimate goals are. Are his ultimate goal – because he could have left Wisconsin Whitewater a long time ago. Let's be real before. Yeah. And quite frankly, he took the Buffalo job, and there were other FCS programs at the time that, you know, would probably have wanted him. It's a decision as a coach you have to make of what's best for you and your family and what your ultimate goal is. And then there's also the time where you're like, hey, this is my one opportunity that we talked about. This might be – one of my only opportunities to, quote, strike while the iron's hot and take over a large program and give that a shot. And if that doesn't work out, I'm still going to get paid, right, and be set for life. Like, that, those are the realities of the situation. And I don't know if he thinks that way or not, but it's a good problem to have if you're KU. I'll just say that.
Yeah.
Because this is injected life into your program that you haven't had for several years. It's built an excitement. And then – if you truly believe in it and they believe in him, that they'll do what they need to do to keep him, whether it's the facility side of things, right? And because everybody always is building new facilities. That's a never-ending process for a school. But if I look at the Nebraska job and the Wisconsin job, okay, Wisconsin traditionally has not paid their head coaches as much as other schools. That's just been how they've operated. I'm not saying they wouldn't break the bank for Lance Leipold at all. Nebraska has enough money, clearly, that by letting Scott Frost go before the 1st of October, that money's not an issue, potentially. And I'm not swaying him toward Nebraska or anywhere on this case. I'm just looking at these two. If it's about the money, I think Nebraska would be more money than what Wisconsin would be, is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah,
but that's if it's about the money. But it's an interesting I know we live in Big 12 country here and stuff, but in SEC with the Missouri Tigers, but it's an interesting time in the Big 10 West. I'll tell you that right now. Two high-profile programs looking for head coaches in mid-year. Now, Wisconsin also, just to clarify on this, their interim head coach is Jim Leonard, who was a defensive back there, legendary defensive back, played in the NFL for a little bit, has been a big name that's come out several times as a head coaching candidate potentially. Turned down the Green Bay Packers defensive coordinator job a couple years ago to stay at Wisconsin. This is kind of his trial run as an alum there because he's revered there and people like him. And so it could be a situation where they're, hey, this is their trial run with him to give him the opportunity that he can take over his alma mater. We don't know what's technically going to happen with that, right? So,
yeah.
And Mickey Joseph's the same way at Nebraska. You know, came in week one, his first press conference, he said, this is on me. It's not on my assistant coaches. It's not on my players, which was a complete opposite of what Scott Frost was at the pro podium usually. And then a week later, he fires his defensive coordinator, though. But he's looking – Mickey Joseph's looking at this at Nebraska saying, as a head coach, like, this is my opportunity to lead a program and show if – and he has in his contract that he'll be retained next year no matter what. But the Big Ten West is wide open right now.
Yeah.
You're just looking at that entire division, like, I think Nebraska's actually in first place right now in the division, like, in the Big Ten West. And so – like, he can put his stamp on that program and say, hey, I'm the guy that needs to lead this. Give me a shorter-term contract.
Yeah.
You know, type of thing, and I want to lead this program. Or it could parlay him into some other head coaching job somewhere else. So it's an interesting world we live in with college football and coaches and everything else.
The timing of it's fascinating, too, because if you put yourselves in the position of of Travis Goff, the athletic director at KU right now, who came from the Big Ten West, right?
Yep, Northwestern.
First year athletic director at his alma mater,
mm-hmm.
young guy by athletic director standards,
correct.
Who's inherited a situation where the football program's been an absolute embarrassment,
mm-hmm.
and at a time when it couldn't be worse timing to be terrible at football because Conference Armageddon has reared its ugly head again,
yes,
right?
Yep.
And everybody's a little bit worried about whether or not there's going to be a seat at the table again. And everybody knows that the television aspect of football is what's driving all the decisions that are made in this situation. So he goes out and he hires a football coach that a lot of people are like, man, we already had one guy from Buffalo.
Right.
You really
want to
hire another guy from Buffalo? And it could not have turned out better for him in this short term. Great problem to have. He's now planning college game day on KU's campus, which he's trying to raise, and especially since Conference Armageddon has reared its ugly head again, all of a sudden KU's putting out these little feelers of renovating the football stadium, upgrading the facilities, all this stuff. They got to raise money. They got to get all the rich alums to kick money in on this and believe in the vision that they're selling for KU football, and they're trying to tell everybody, if you want to be considered by whatever conferences mm-hmm. are considering you, we got to show that we're legit in football. We got to have fans show up to the games. We got to blah, blah, blah. So it's all happening. But then at the exact same time, these jobs come open, and he's got to sit there and go, okay, I just got a one-year contract. He's given two contract extensions to Lance Leipold already.
Yes.
And both of those, he's probably going to have to tear up and go back and say, hey, let's give him another deal to see if this will hold on to him. And he's got to convince the alums, based off of a very short-term body of work from Leipold, right?
Yes, and it's, again, he's a new athletic director, when I say this, right? Inherited this program, as you mentioned, and has to convince these alums that this is different than the other two times that other ADs have gone to you and asked for these donations.
Yeah.
To pay for this head football coach.
But what he does have is at least some wins under his belt.
Yes, he does.
But I know this for a fact because I talk to people. Some of those rich alums are going, hey, look, we love this. We love where it's headed. Leipold looks great. But am I really supposed to invest at this level based off of five games?
Right.
You know, and I would say it's more than five games because you and I talked about this.
Yeah.
I was very optimistic about KU football this year, winning mm-hmm. four or five games because of what I saw last year through the course of the year. You could tell that was a well-coached team that was getting better every single week.
And played hard.
Yeah.
And played hard. That's the thing you can see.
And
you
disciplined can, and all that. Yeah.
This is where sometimes I don't want to degrade anybody, but like the casual fan – when you start watching, they're like, oh, we got killed again. You know, mm-hmm. we got destroyed again this week. Yeah, but your team played they didn't give up. They played a lot harder than what they've played before in the past. You can
even
see
in the fourth quarter down 20.
You can see the progress coming.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, I just think it's all fascinating because I don't think Leipold's asked for any of this attention.
No,
I don't think he's out there looking for jobs or anything like that, but this is what happens when you perform at an incredibly high level.
Yes.
People seek your, you know, and so, boy, what an interesting time. I think it's going to be a massive crowd up in Lawrence on Saturday. We'll see
if
how
I didn't have to coach my son's youth baseball team, I'd consider going over there just for the sake of being a part of all of it.
I'm abdicating my responsibilities as head coach of the Glowing Dragons on Saturday to go to this game. It'll be fun. All right, we're going to talk NFL. We got a lot with Bo Richter to talk about on the Chiefs side. The game last night, by the way, the Rams looking rough, and much more right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We got Mark Bo Richter in studio. Let's get to the NFL, Mark. The Chiefs, what was your big takeaway from their big win over the Bucks on Sunday night?
Absolutely dominating performance, first and foremost. The score at the end of the game was not indicative of how that game went. A 10-point win in the National Football League is an absolute beatdown, usually, let alone... You know, I know there are some people that are concerned about the defense a little bit, the amount of passing yards they gave up. But with the way that game started for the Chiefs, it couldn't have started any better. You know, complete opposite, flip the script of what happened a week ago against the Colts. You get the fumble on the opening kickoff. You go up big right off the bat and completely took Tampa Bay out of their game plan. And then I think Steve Spagnuolo's game plan changed defensively too. We have this in hand. We're going to play, let Brady throw everything in front of us, and we're just going to rally the ball, not give up any big-time plays. And that's what happened. And Mike Evans is one hell of a player, okay? And there was good coverage on him for the most part all night. A couple of those touchdowns, just really good throws and really good catches. Like, you just can't that happens. And specifically the one fade in the corner of the end zone was a perfectly thrown ball by Brady, and you know, Jalen Watson couldn't have covered him any better on stuff. But a dominating performance. It was a statement. I think this team was challenged after going to Indianapolis. I think Indianapolis was kind of a look-ahead game, not from necessarily from the coaching staff, but I think some of the players – you know, and they got hit in the mouth with a few mistakes early, special teams-wise and some stuff, and just didn't play as well as they needed to. And they came out Sunday night and absolutely made a statement. And I'm not a huge person as a former player as extra motivation on things, but there seemed to be a little bit of this edge of the last time we were here in Tampa Bay, we got embarrassed. And I know there's a rebuilt offensive line. A lot of those guys weren't there for that. But we're not going to be embarrassed again. And they came out and delivered a statement. And I was laughing a little bit at the broadcast when Chris Collinsworth was like, Andy Reid wants to pound the football and run the football. And I'm like, not normally he doesn't, okay? Like, normally he doesn't. And this was early on in the game. And that told me, and Nate, you've been a part of these pre-production meetings, that told me in the production meetings before the game on stuff when they meet with the players and coaches, and usually it's on Saturday, you know, type of thing, when you get to the team hotel. And for those that don't know, you know, you sit down in a conference room at the team hotel with the producers of Sunday Night Football in this case, and the announcers, and they ask you questions, you know, and you're not giving away too many things. But you're giving them little tidbits that they can use throughout the course of the broadcast on stuff. And it's kind of a car wash of individual players they want to talk to. And they talk to the head coaches, sometimes the coordinators. But that told me that Andy Reid was like, we're going to run the football tonight. And they did. And offensive linemen, every offensive lineman you talk to loves to run the football because they get to fire out and move guys off the line of scrimmage. And they moved guys off the line of scrimmage Sunday night. And I think they were challenged. I think the offensive line was challenged. I think the running backs were challenged. And this is a good step going forward, because I don't care if you have 15 and all the things that he can do as your quarterback. For this offense to roll the way it needs to, and I've said this a lot, they need to run the ball effectively and efficiently. Now, I don't necessarily think that needs to be 35 carries a game overall, but when it's working, you don't go away from it. And it's the sum of all the parts for this offense. And I thought Pacheco ran extremely hard. He always has run hard, but he looked like a man on a mission. It looked like he elevated Clyde Edwards-Helaire in that piece. And I've said before, too, and I said this on the pregame show this week, that the back's vision, the running back's vision over the last couple of weeks has not been great. They've missed holes to run through that the offensive line has opened up for them. And it's been funny, but not funny, to watch Patrick Mahomes kind of point at the hole after, you know, they bounce it outside on things like mm-hmm. it needs to be up in here. And that looked a lot better Sunday night. And for Pacheco as a rookie, that's going to come playing behind this offensive line on things, and it's going to come along. But I'm fine with the running back spike committee piece, especially when they're running the ball like they did on Sunday night. It was a dominating performance, and that game was over at halftime.
You think they'll continue? I mean, this was almost a 50-50 run pass split, which is very uncharacteristic of the Andy Reid system.
I don't think it'll continue in a 50-50 split type of piece. I still think you're going to end up seeing a 70-30 type split. But I do want them to continue to at least try. Okay? As a wide receiver, I want to throw the ball all day long too, right? Catch mm-hmm. the football. But you have to be able to run the football effectively and in some short yardage situations. And short yardage situations are not always third and one, third and two. It's second and one, second and two.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're ripping off close to 6 yards a carry like they did on – and that's hard to sustain, okay, on things. But if you're ripping off 6 yards a carry, and Sunday night was 6 yards a carry of not 250-yard runs that
right.
that skewed that, right?
It was 6 yards
yes,
a carry.
Yes, there was a few longer runs in there, but it was truly almost 5 to 6 yards a carry every time. You got to be able to use that to your advantage, because now as an offensive coordinator – with Eric Bieniemy in conjunction with Andy Reid on things, you've got your entire playbook to dictate what you want to do. You're not as reactionary overall and in situations you necessarily don't want to be in. You can do some of the little tricky gadget stuff that they like to do from time to time. And I thought, honestly, Sunday night it was a nice mix of all that, because there were some third and short situations where they threw a quick screen to Travis Kelce or to some other guys on some stuff that sometimes we look at and go, wow, why are they getting so cute here? Why aren't they running the ball? Well, if I've got confidence that they can run the ball as well as they did defensively, if I'm a defensive coordinator, I'm not looking for all this window dressing and the cute stuff on those situations. Now, we truly have to defend the run. And that's why I think it was a huge step forward for them on Sunday night.
So let's talk some of the rest of the league real quick before we move on to Raider Week. The Rams.
Mm-hmm.
What did they get old? What do you see from? I mean, they looked terrible last night.
It's I don't know if it's the Super Bowl hangover, you know, that you see some teams have, or what, but. You know, the Niners have had their number lately over the last couple of years. And
6 in a row, Mike Shanahan has beaten
Kyle Shanahan.
I'm sorry.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Kyle Shanahan has beaten the man, I'm old.
That's all right. You were blinded by that. Mike Shanahan's teeth and white hair.
That's
right now.
What
That's
it
what
is.
It is now,
yeah,
but,
yeah. 6 in a row against the Rams, though, in the regular season.
Yeah. In a divisional opponent. The Rams got him in the playoffs last year, but that. They clearly have their number in some capacity. And, you know, it's – I don't necessarily know if you can put your finger on it. I mean, Stafford, threw for 260 yards, something like that last night, no touchdowns, an interception.
252 because he did not hit the over.
Okay. Thanks, Marco.
Yeah, you want to know stats. As long as Marco's got money on it, he'll give you the stats.
And it just they don't look in sync right now. That's what I look at it with the Rams. I think they'll be fine moving forward, but there seems to be a little bit of the Super Bowl hangover to start the year for them. That's what I'd attribute it to.
Did you see the fight on the sideline? In the rant with between, I can't remember which Rams players were getting into it. They keep showing the highlights of it here when I'm watching. And the reason I ask is because as much time as we spent talking about the conversation between Patrick Mahomes and Eric Bieniemy, that was a fight. Like those guys, if they hadn't been separated by multiple teammates, would have been throwing punches, I think, at one another. I don't know. Just context in terms of like, you know, how much a big of a deal we make about guys disagreeing with things on the sidelines.
Look, that stuff happens a lot. Sometimes it escalates more than what it needs to on the sideline. But I think what you're seeing is frustration, right, from their own internal team. Like, why are we not playing as well as we need to be playing right now? And it's easy to start pointing fingers at guys. This is where your resolve of how strong is your locker room and your leadership in your locker room to not, you know, start pointing the finger at the other guys. I mean, I'll be honest with you, and we've talked about this before. Like, we go back to that 2003 year when I played, 21 years ago now. But offensively, we were so good, and defensively, we weren't, you know. And I think our leadership in that locker room, we didn't point fingers at each other. You know, after the fact, you know, we sit here and look at it like, man, our defense wasn't very good.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew it. But we knew we had to do more offensively to score. You know, we were able to hold that together where those frustrations of the guys on the other side of the ball not getting it done, part of it had to do with scheme and different things, right? It wasn't necessarily them as players, but you were able to still come together because you knew what we had to do. And I think that's where the Chiefs have been good over the last couple of years. Even last year when they went through this rough stretch about this time when I told all the Chiefs fans to chill out on things where it was – you know, they're going to be fine. They're going to figure this out. They've got good locker room leadership, and as long as Andy Reid's leading them, he knows how to get teams to win. That's a proven fact. That's not an opinion. That's a proven fact. And to keep guys together, which I think is healthy for the Chiefs, but right now the Rams are going through that. So we're going to see over the next couple of weeks here what happens with them.
What's your takeaway of the entire situation involving Tua and the Dolphins? Especially now they're saying that they could be instituting more changes to the concussion protocol in the wake of everything that's happened.
Well, I don't think there's any way anybody could have watched that game the Sunday before and then, doctor or not, allow him to play on Thursday night. I just don't. Like, I've seen guys that have back injuries. One that usually sits in the studio, right? Like, type of thing on things. I've had back spasms and back stuff myself. I think as we get older, as men, a lot of us do. But I've had back spasms that have brought me to my knees before, okay, on things. I don't have to brace myself to, you know, to get up or wobble. There's a difference between a wobble and something that's just bringing you down to your knees from a back side of things. Now, neurologically, that can happen to you. But I don't think anybody can watch his head get slammed on the turf in the first hit, okay, the first time it happened, with all that goes on with, quote, the concussion protocol, and not assume that he needs to be checked out more for a concussion. At some point, you also have to protect the player from the player. Because we are all creatures of habit as players. We want to play. We're taught to fight through things, even if it's a head injury. Now, there's more studies out there now on that sort of stuff than there was in the past. But you want to play. You want to be your competitor, and you have to protect the player from the player. But it was an ultimate failure all the way around because you can't ask a guy to turn around and play 4 days later because it's been proven that it doesn't take near as much of a hit to when you've already been concussed once to I don't want to call it relapse, but to have another concussion. You are more susceptible to it. That's been proven. That's not an opinion. That's those are studies that have been done.
Yeah.
And there are studies that have been done on that also that it, even 3-4 weeks later after you've been cleared to go back, you've passed all the tests, that you're still at risk for that sort of thing. So I think it was an ultimate failure across the board with it. You know, hopefully Tua is going to be good here moving forward and recovers from it. But when you're talking about brain injuries, it can deal with people's lives on things. And I want to make this statement too. This doesn't help youth football. Okay? It doesn't help youth football when we see the highest level not taking care of their players. Because you have parents sitting at home that say, hey, I don't know if I want my son or daughter to play football. And I use son or daughter because there are more girls now playing football. And that goes into flag football, goes into full contact football, everything because of this. And that's the part to me that's sad. There is an inherent risk. There's an inherent risk in every single sport for concussions. Football just a little bit more because of the nature of it. But soccer's a big one also. And I'm not throwing soccer under the bus here. I'm just saying there's been big rules time. Instituted on heading, right, at a young age that they can't
not
do it.
Not allowed to head the ball before you're 12 years old.
Exactly. Yeah. Like that sort of thing. There have been changes made. Same with football.
Mm-hmm.
On how you teach tackling, all those sorts of things. And I, you know, a few years ago there was, quote, the war on football with brain injuries and concussions, and I think it spurned this movement at least towards being much more safe and being more cautious. And I've been a youth football coach. My son is an eighth grader, plays youth football, for his middle school here, on things, and he'll continue to play football as long as he wants to. Because I think it's safe. And as long as I think it's safe and they're teaching them the right things, then that's the way to go. But this doesn't help the optics of all of that, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, these are conversations my wife and I have a lot because she's pretty staunch against it.
Yeah.
You know, because she's, as a physical therapist, had to treat spinal cord injuries and head injuries that are much more difficult to rehab from than if you tear your ACL.
Yes.
Or break your leg. You know, they can fix those things pretty easily by today's standards and get you back on your feet. Mm-hmm. But when you have a brain injury or a spinal cord injury, that's a much more difficult proposition. And I think you make a great point. And that's one of the things that stunned me so much about this whole situation was I kind of thought we were past this.
Yes.
You know?
That's the part to me, yeah. too, that the fact they let him play on a Thursday night. And this is the hard part that – I say the hard part, but it's not really that hard of a decision. Okay, it's not. The NFL preaches player safety, or tries to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when all the players
hats that all the linemen were wearing in the preseason,
which is good. I think that's all great, though.
Yeah.
I think that stuff's all great.
Yes.
The problem I have is when the NFL preaches player safety, and this is on the Players Association too. They're not absolved to any of this because,
right.
Don't get me on a rant about them in this case. But between those two parties, you agree to add a 17th game because it involves TV dollars, and that benefits the players too. But then every team has to play a Thursday night game. Turn around four games in. And I said this last night. I was on, the Legend Show with Bill Moss last night, and when you start looking at player safety and you're asking guys to go back out and play 4 or 5 days later, I'm glad that the Chiefs played on Thursday night early in the season.
Right.
You know?
Right.
As a player, I don't want to play a Thursday night game in November when you're truly even more beat up than you are now. You can't tell me you're for player safety and then make these guys go out and do that stuff. And again, the NFLPA agreed to all this. They've agreed to all this. And so when you agree to this too, you're not absolved of this situation either.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they're revisiting the concussion protocols and different things, and I know a lot was made of the independent neurologists on all that stuff, and a few years back, as I'm getting on this right now, a few years back, it felt like every guy was in concussion protocol for a while, right? He got hit on the sideline. It was, you know what? That's fine. For me as a player, I can't tell you how many times I, quote, got my bell rung and didn't say anything, you know, about it, where you got the cobwebs in your head for a few minutes and then you shake it off. It's fine. Expand the rosters in. There's enough money there with the 17th game.
Yeah.
Expand the rosters so that you can have more guys in, quote, you don't want them in the concussion protocol, but you can put them in there for their own safety and make sure. And if a guy has to miss, you know, two drives because you're truly checking him out and they go back to the locker room in that second phase of the protocols they used to have it on things, then that's okay. That is okay. And I don't care what the fans think about the fantasy side of things, right, and all that kind of stuff. It's about the health of the player overall and long term, but also in the short term. And the Dolphins failed that 100%. And the NFL failed it, and the NFLPA failed it. Because somebody else should have stepped in and said, he's not playing Thursday night.
Yeah, and that point you make about the players is very valid, because I made the joke about the goofy hats that the linemen had to wear in training camp this year. They do look silly, but you know what? They will make a difference.
Yeah.
It's statistically proven, and I couldn't stop rolling my eyes when I would hear all these players griping about wearing it and how they don't think they should have to wear it and it's not fair and all this stuff. And it's like, look, this is another example of someone else needs to protect you guys from yourselves, you know, because I remember when they started making us wear seatbelts. When I was a kid,
yes.
We didn't wear seatbelts. I climbed all over the back of the station wagon that my mom drove us around in. Well, that thing was a playground in the back of it. And you know what? That was stupid.
Yeah.
It was stupid. Did I survive it? Yes. I was lucky. You know, we didn't have a car crash that could have killed
me. Right.
You know, and I remember when they started making us wear seatbelts, we griped all the time, you know. And I remember there were certain families in our neighborhood that were already on, like, no, if you're riding in our car, you're wearing a seatbelt. Oh, it's uncomfortable. I don't like it. It makes my stomach hurt. I mean, I remember saying all that stuff. Shut up. Put the seatbelt on.
Yeah.
You know, and the same thing, like, that's how I feel about those goofy hats. Shut up and wear the hat, man.
Yeah.
You know, ask Tim Grunhard, you know, what it's like to be living with the fact that you've smashed heads with another 300-pound man over and over again in practice for 15 years.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, it's
sometimes, and this is medically true also, that sometimes it's not about the one big hit, it's the repeated hits to the head.
Yes.
The smaller repeated hits to the head. And I'll give a lot of credit to the helmet manufacturers out there. There have been tremendous strides done, because even the helmet I wore 20 years ago is obsolete now, you know, on things.
Yeah.
And I look inside my son's helmet, and he's got one of the best helmets on the market that was purchased for him, okay, on things. And that was a safety reason on that piece. Now, not everybody can do that. I didn't actually make that decision on that side of things. But the equipment that these high schools have, that these colleges have, that the pros have, is far better than it ever used to be. And specifically in the headgear that they're wearing. But if you can add an extra layer of protection throughout the course of a practice that eliminates some of that stuff, then I'm all for it. Now, where players bristle at it is because we're creatures of habit and we don't want to be told what to do necessarily or what I have to wear from an equipment side of things. You look at the shoulder pads over the years. Now, a lot of them are custom now at the pro level and everything else, but they've gotten smaller. More of it's about low profileness as opposed to what it is before, because technology's been better, where there's more gel and different things underneath to protect you. But you watch on Sundays, there are guys that don't have their shoulder pads. Defensive linemen are tiny.
Yeah.
Why? It's less that the offensive lineman can grab a hold of.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason why you use double stick tape to tape your jersey down to your pads so the guy can't grab it. Those are all equipment things that guys do, not to necessarily gain an advantage, but to make it more difficult. And so when guys are asked to do things during training camp, like wear the Guardian caps, I think is actually the name of them, to protect their safety, it's hard for them to do it because we don't like change. That's what it is. We don't like change.
And then that's where, like you said, people have to step in and protect the guys, and we'll see. Mark, thank you so much for the time.
We didn't
even
get to the Raiders, but that's all right.
You know what?
It's Raider week. This is a better. Yeah. I'll just say this: it's a better Raider team coming in than people think, than their record is.
Are you saying double digit win like Joe Valerio, or you think it's going to be closer?
I think it'll be closer, because every time the Raiders and Chiefs play, for the most part, it usually is a close game. It's traditionally been a battle. It's a division game. This is an important one. This can't be a look ahead game for the Chiefs because they got Buffalo coming in the following week. This is an important game. I think they're focused. I think they'll be ready to go. And I think they realize that this Raider team is still finding their direction here through the first 4 weeks of the season. New offense, new pieces to the puzzle.
They ran the ball like crazy last week.
They did, and that's what's going to make them successful, if they run the ball. So the Chiefs got to stop the run this week.
Mark, thanks for the time, man. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you after the Raider game
next
week.
Sounds good.
All right, that's Mark Boerichter. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.